This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a podcast of Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Australia's only LGBTI program focused on the horror and sci-fi community.
For International Women's Day 2016. Strong female characters. Tuesday, March the 8th, 10 p.m. till 11 p.m. We'll be talking about those ballsy, awesome women that make you shiver, shake, make you happy inside. Only on Sci-Fi and Scream. We look at the genre, whether it's comics, television, cult, science fiction or horror. Strong female characters. For International Women's Day, here on Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
So it begins.
This is Captain Jake Thompson of the Advanced Destroyer Group to enemy vessels. We have you surrounded. You are ordered to surrender your vessels or be destroyed. I say again, surrender or be destroyed.
This is the White Star Fleet. Negative on surrender. We will not stand down.
Who is it? Identify yourself.
Who am I? I am Susan Ivanova, commander, daughter of Andrei and Sophie Ivanov. I am the right hand of vengeance, and the boot that is going to kick your sorry ass all the way back to Earth. I am death incarnate, and the last living thing that you are ever going to see.
Sci-Fi and Scream here on Joy 94.9. It is International Women's Day, so it's all about strong female character. Thank you, Chatterbox, for their chattering. It's always good here on Joy 94.9. And for Sci-Fi and Scream, you probably heard a bit of Babylon 5 there. Dedicate that to Rose if she's listening out there somewhere in the stratosphere. That's for her. Now, of course, it is International Women's Day, and bringing her back to... on the stage tonight, we've got Lauren Stardust.
Woohoo! How you doing?
Yeah. How's your IWD going?
My IWD?
International Women's Day.
It is baller. Probably
is
not the
no.
the right. It's
no.
It's right. It's ovarian awesome is what it is.
Oh, okay.
Super
oh,
good
oh.
times. Yeah, yeah. For these cisgendered women. If not, it's just a totally rad Women's Day for all awesome women out there. I'm having a great time.
That's cool. Yoo-hoo. Good one. Yes, so tonight on Sci-Fi and Scream, it's strong female characters and... What are we talking about? All sorts of stuff from one end of the world to the other, from here to beyond Japan, looking at some J-horror.
Yes, indeed.
Some creepy stuff there, and that's good, though. Good, strong female characters and some pretty interesting ones. Rape revenge films, Ida Lupino, who was probably one of the first directors to do a rape revenge film, actually. So, strong content warning, but it's International Women's Day, so, you know, if you're a lady, or if you identify as one, or if you like ladies, or if you just are sitting back listening, stay tuned to us tonight. Also, send us a message, 0427-JOY949, or email onair@joy.org.au. Now, I don't know that much about Babylon 5, but that was Romanova. I probably said that wrong. But look, there's lots to talk about. Also, actually, I do have a interview coming up as well with the wonderful Alexandra Hallanicholas. Hello, she is indeed talking about her book about Suspiria. A little bit of a chat with her about that. What else? Looking at, because we looked at Suspiria a few weeks back when we were doing international. Well, no, not international. It was just Women in Horror Month.
Yeah,
in February. That was quite fun.
That was great because I hadn't seen it for years. Actually, I actually found out I hadn't seen it at all. I'd seen the
Seen it, but you haven't seen it.
No, I'd like, known so much about it because I was such an Argento fan, and I mean, like Argento uses very the same color palettes in a lot of his films. There's a lot of similarities in that he uses a lot of strong women within his film because he said he finds women more interesting. But I had actually seen It's Inferno, which is the sequel. Is that correct? Or
that's
sort of like the spiritual sequel?
Because it's a trilogy. It's and then there's Mother of Tears came out in 2007.
So I had seen Inferno because it was playing on late night SBS or something like that. And I was like, oh, this is Suspiria, because it wasn't introduced properly. Then heading back through it, I was amazed and excited to find that Suspiria is definitely my favourite out of the two that I've seen, and just some wonderful, wonderful performances, amazing Dario. We love him so much.
Dario stuff. Yeah,
yes.
I mean, incredible. Now, the podcast for that particular show for our Women in Horror Month for February is out now. It's out there on joy.org.au /sci-fi and scream. So, yeah, International Women's Day is global, and I would say the Northern Hemisphere have now turned on to it because of something called time, space continuum, and you know, the equator and things like that, time zones. But, yes, so we've been doing it for longer. And literally. So looking at things in genre, because horror, of course, science fiction, all sorts of types of thrillers, noirs, cult films, we hope to cover a few of them. And I mentioned Ida Lupino before, British by birth, actually, but went to Hollywood as a young lady. And during the Second World War, she was actually served as a lieutenant in the Women's Ambulance and Defence Corps. So she was pretty amazing, and then decided to become an actress because she thought that would be fun, but also she wanted to make art and films, and then realized that the only way to take control was of her character was to direct, write and direct, and that's what she did. She was one of the very first pioneers, a woman director and filmmaker, and as I said, did a rape movie, first of its kind in 1950, called Outrage, which was outrageous.
Amazing.
I know, she was pretty out there. So, little chat about that a bit later on. And look, there's some great stuff coming up too, speaking of female and woman content for Melbourne Queer Film Festival. We've got some great ones. A new Jamie Babbitt film. Has anyone here seen But I'm a Cheerleader?
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
I have not seen this film,
but I've heard a lot of wonderful things about it. It is the best. She's got a great film coming out for the Queer Film Festival, which starts March 31st, runs to April 11th. Addicted to Fresno. It's a dark comedy, sharp dialogue, and got a bit of a sex addiction there, and it's a bit of a thriller, a bit of a twist. Great cast. So we've got sex addict Shannon, Judy Greer, a lesbian sister Martha, one and only Natasha Lyonne, which is fabulous. So, yeah, But I'm a Cheerleader. I just love that film, and Aubrey Plaza's in this too, so, and Molly Shannon, so it looks bloody awesome.
Ooh.
So yeah, there's some great films. More noir and cult films would be good. There's A Girl's Lost. This is a Swedish thriller, mm-hmm. a gender-swapping fantasy that follows the plight of three outcast teenage girls who happen upon a mysterious plant that can change their gender overnight. So this looks really interesting, but all sorts of stuff happens, and it looks like a real twisted one, which we love. We love that sort of thing here on Sci-Fi and Scream. We'll have more about that, and hopefully, cross fingers, we'll have an interview with Jamie Babbitt. That would be so cool. She's a bit like John Waters. In fact, I think she might have worked with him at some stage.
Maybe.
Lots of people confuse her style. They go, is this a John Waters movie? No, it's not.
No. Jamie Babbitt.
Jamie, she's the one. Jamie is the one. Now, like I said, if you've got a message, if there's a favourite genre film that has a strong female protagonist in it, horror, perhaps you're talking about a comic strip character that's been made into a TV series or a film, let us know. It's easy to do. 0427 Joy949 on air at joy.org.au for the emailing. Go ahead and e-woman. Not email, but e-woman.
E-female.
Yeah. No, look, you wanted to talk a bit about Mad Max Fury Road and how well that has been received.
Yeah, I think it's beyond the point where people can be like, when people can say that films about women don't sell. Even though Mad Max has the title of a male character and is sort of following a male character, Mad Max is not, the most current Mad Max is not completely centered around Max. He's not the most interesting part of the film, and that becomes very obvious from the first few minutes.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, we're beyond the stage where we can say, films with women in them don't sell, because, swept up at the Oscars. Didn't win Best Film. But I believe it got six Oscars.
Six Oscars?
Yeah, it had several.
Yeah. One of the highest.
Yeah, completely. And I just am absolutely so very happy. And maybe with that, I know with that it would have made quite a bit of money as well. Mm. Even though it's not why we do it, for the money.
Isn't it?
We do it for the money on community radio. Like, money does do a lot of talking, so hopefully a lot of directors out there are going to see that these films are selling. They're selling big. Like Frozen, obviously, very different films, but films with female leads sell. They sell. It's as simple as that. Yep. So stop making excuses and go out and make stories about women.
Start making sense. And also allowing women, or I shouldn't say allowing, but look, standing aside, a lot of men stand aside, I hope, to let women direct as well, because there are so many, and you hear about all these new remakes that have been made, and so many of them are, you know, these young independent filmmakers, and they're always male who are given those chances and those opportunities. That needs to stop. I mean, you've heard that Death Wish is going to be remade, it's like, why?
Well, they're two young guys
who've only been experienced in one film before, and I know some women female directors, you know, who would love the chance to be able to have some money thrown at them, to have a studio back them and let them make awesome horror films.
We would do really cool stuff. One of the most annoying things to happen over the last year was the Gem and the Holograms film, which was given to men. How do we make this for women by taking away everything that Gem and the Holograms actually was? She was a full-grown woman. She owned a studio. She ran a business and fired the producer because he kept on screwing her over. Like, she put everybody in their place. She viewed her partner in it, her love interest in it, as second to her band always. And it's really cool to see, have that, like, she's a young, successful woman. What a role model for young women. And also there was a lot of queer connotation within the, like, a lot of, I think maybe it was like a lot of fan shipping as well, but they brought that through in the comic now. So a lot of queer representation.
The comic is definitely better and improved.
Of course.
And it's a transgender writer for the comic as well. So that's a trans woman, which is awesome.
Yes, more representation. Yep. Please. Yeah. Though the shipping, like the fandom has taken it places, and it's so wonderful that it's been picked up in the comic because they did have those pairings, as well as It almost like imitates like the Sailor Moon thing. It's like when they bring it over to Australia, even though there have been queer relationships, lesbian relationships, they tend to edit them out for an Australian audience.
Mm.
I think that has a lot to say about
yes,
country.
What's going on here? Yes. I mean, they did the same thing with Adventure Time. They edited the versions that were played here on the national broadcaster. It's just weird.
Yeah,
it's just weird.
And as well with Steven Universe, there's a moment where there's one character who's very openly gay within the show. I think her name's Opal.
Mm.
And she is even pining over her last relationship with a woman, and it's mentioned, you know, in a way obviously kids can understand because the show isn't about romance. It's a kids' show. It just has cool action sequences,
yep.
and sometimes there are relationships. Yep, get over
exactly.
it. Exactly. Yeah, but they edited out like a long embrace, and what could have been construed as a kiss.
Oh,
it was just absolutely
just
ridiculous.
Boring.
Yeah,
it's just boring,
like, come on,
know?
Guys. Kids get it. They're not stupid.
Kids get it, and kids need to be supported, and
of
like
course.
All kids, all backgrounds. And that brings us to another subject, which isn't really Sci-Fi and Scream, but we certainly do support the idea of safe schools.
Absolutely.
On the show.
Absolutely.
So I know that's not genre, but
it doesn't matter.
It's real life, you know?
Yeah,
let's stop the horrors from happening in the real world.
Yeah.
Let's just keep them focused to fiction, shall we?
I think that even if it isn't genre specific, and it might not be genre specific to people's lives,
yeah.
make it known that you support safe
exactly.
schools.
Exactly.
It is so important.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream. It's International Women's Day night here on Joy.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on
Joy. You said Scream. Oh, it's Squeam.
It's Squeam like
Squeam.
Queasy.
Sorry,
like
yeah. Once more with feeling.
Okay.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Essie Davis from the Babadook, and you are listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Loved Boxing Helena.
Did
we? Yeah. Oh, let's start this, shall we?
Let's
start this interview. This is Sonia for Sci-Fi and Scream here on Joy 94.9. And I have in the studio, we were reminiscing about the last time that we did this, the last time we chatted. It was last year. It was the David Bowie is, and certainly a lot has happened with his passing. And
David Bowie was.
Exactly. That's the next...
changed grammar.
I know. It's just a very bizarre time, 2016 already, and lots of interesting things coming up. So I have Alexandra Haller-Nicholas back. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
It's the longest intro ever. I've got my Ghostbusters t-shirt on, by the way, because that has, at this point in time, the first trailer has hit and the online community is going off. And I just love all these people who say, oh, I don't like this. This is like, it's not as good as the original. Get over yourselves.
It's
Saturday Night Live at the end of the day. And they are the Saturday Night Live women.
I'm very pro the idea of an all-women Ghostbusters. But I have to say that my dream all-women Ghostbusters is just four Annie Potts.
Oh, wow.
We have the CG to do that. Like, we can do it. Like, even back from then. Like, I just want four Annie Potts.
They did it with Michael Keaton, didn't they, back in the 80s?
Let's do it. Why not? So I'm not against this, but to me that would be the optimum level of excitement for me.
I love Kristen Wiig, and I think, she's excellent.
She fell off my radar until Nasty Baby.
And you like Nasty Baby?
Love
Sebastian
Nasty Baby.
Silver.
He's amazing. Well, Magic is, I think, one of the best horror films made in the last 10 years.
And
he's a genius.
Films about bipolarism and if it's schizophrenia, I'm not 100%.
So much going on in that film.
Amazing.
And the way that it leaves the ending open.
That yellow raincoat.
Beautiful. Just beautiful. An iconic
Juno
horror.
Temple. And look at her. I mean,
she's somebody whose career
here's
I went
the Bowie
back as
connection.
Well. Yep. The Julian Temple.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Absolute beginners. Everyone hates that film except for me.
I love that film.
Really?
I love that film. The dancing on a typewriter.
Well, you can stay. No, I love it too. It's hilarious. And Patsy Kinsale. I love Patsy. Mm-hmm.
I suspect that Absolute Beginners was a little bit ahead of its time.
Yeah, so ahead of its time.
It's a hot mess, but aren't we all? You know,
it was
okay.
the '80s, wasn't it? Everything was a pretty
damn hot mess.
Jeez, after the '70s, what could you do? And speaking of the '70s, back on track, kind of 1977, of course, and 1976. But Suspiria, and we're talking about your book. Mm. Finally,
yeah,
it's happened. Tell us about this.
It has. I've written my third book has just come out, and it's a monograph. It's the first English language. Full book, wow. I believe, on Dario Argento's classic Italian horror film, Suspiria.
Woo.
So I'm very excited. It's been a kind of project.
How long has it been?
Let me see. Probably about two or three years.
Wow.
So okay. I've been sitting with this for a while. I mean, the film's been sitting with me forever. You know,
we've been waiting forever for you to do this.
Uh-huh. But it was a joy. My first two previous books were both, again, on horror film or exploitation film. The first one was on rape revenge film and the second one was on found footage horror film. And they were more survey books, so they covered entire categories or subgenres.
Yeah, there's a lot there to cover.
Yeah, so they were really about watching a whole bunch of films and then talking about what I found they had in common or what they didn't have in common, which, funnily enough, ended up being more interesting.
Mm.
This book was totally different. So my background is as an academic. So those books were a little more academic-leaning, but this was my first sort of non-academic non-fiction book. And it was also dedicated to just one film. So instead of watching 300 movies, I just had to watch 300 times. That's exactly it. And it's a joy. I mean, it's a film that I just love. Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about the film for those horror virgins out there?
Yeah,
it's time to, you know,
it's one of those
pop
rare
your cherry and you might as well with Suspiria.
It's one of those rare films that talking about plot doesn't help. And this has actually been one of the most interesting things about writing about it, because the plot's very simple and straightforward. It's a fairy tale. Dario Argento wanted almost to make a kind of live-action Disney film.
Mm.
You know, so Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Fantasia, that kind of idea. So it's about a young girl, an American girl, played by Jessica Harper, an American actress who was in Phantom of the Opera, the wonderful Brian De Palma film. And on the back of that, she came to Europe to make this film with Argento. She plays Susie Bannion, a young American ballet dancer who comes to Germany to go to the famed Freiburg Academy, the ballet school. And she arrives there one stormy night and finds strange things, and people are going missing and strange things are happening. What is the mystery of this film? And the mystery, of course, isn't a mystery, because the soundtrack by the very famous Goblin prog rock band Goblin, who do a really iconic soundtrack that they played live at Acme, actually, as a live score to this a couple of years ago.
Mm. Yes, I went to that.
It's beautiful. The opening track of this film is called Witch, and they just say the words over and over again, Witch, Witch, Witch.
Yeah.
There's no secret. There's no mystery. We know from the word go what the big mystery is. So the film is very deliberately not about plot. It's not complicated. These aren't complex characterizations. This is not where the experience of this film hinges on. What it hinges on is how it looks and how it sounds and how
and
it makes you feel.
Atmosphere.
It's just totally over the top. It's like being inside a kaleidoscope, the colours. It's one of the very last films made on Technicolor.
Yes, yeah.
And they really ramped it up. And the sound is just as intense. So it's a real sensory experience more than an intellectual one.
Yeah, it does remind me, if I could companion it with something, I think it would be 1976, it would be the opening credits of Taxi Driver, actually. Some of the same kind of feelings and sensibilities, and the rain and the colours and the reflections, and there's a lot going on, but there's not really. It's like
that's the thing that if you try to translate it
journey,
into, if you try to translate it into language, it almost doesn't work.
You just have to watch it,
which made it a very strange experience writing a book about Suspiria, because this is almost what I had to say. It's almost trying to write how a poem works.
Yes, yeah.
And the whole point of is that you can't, because poems are poems, and that's what makes them work. That's what makes them so special. Yeah. So it was an interesting experience writing about Suspiria, because you could do, okay, you know, it was written by this person, it was made here, and this person was the cinematographer, and all of those facts and figures, but none of that has anything to do with really what makes the film work. What makes the film work is our inability to express how magical it is, and that's what makes magic magic.
Yeah, and certainly the cinematography, the look of the film, everything about it, the female protagonists in there.
There was talk about doing a TV series for a
while.
That's
right, yeah.
And then that kind of vanished, and then in your last year...
I was quite relieved about it, personally.
What Ignino's name came up last year, about September last year, in relation to this project, which I was excited about simply for the fact that he's Italian.
And it's also, like, he's and good. Bloody good.
Yeah, no, these two things were, love these two things were a step forward for me.
Reminds me of 1970s Italian filmmaking. Mm-hmm. This, it's got the same sensibility and understanding of visual space and all those things that the Italians have contributed to cinema, which is marvelous.
Argento has such a, he's really entrenched in Italian art history. He really understands the violence of Italian opera.
Caravaggio,
he started off as a film critic, so he's very literate. He's worked with Sergio Leone, he's worked with Bernardo Bertolucci. You know, he knows these people. You know, one of Argento's earliest memories, his father was in the industry. One of his earliest memories is sitting on Sophia Loren's knee. So he's very Italian, and I think having another filthy, saucy,
terrible objectification going on.
Oh, I'm sure.
Have you seen that one? Sorry, digressing. But have you seen her serving? There's a picture of her serving pizza. It's just wow. It's
she's unparalleled. She is unparalleled.
Never. Well, there'll never be a Sophia Loren again. Cultural touchstones. And congratulations. You've got the book done, Alexandra.
Hooray. Thank you. And thank you for having me to chat to.
That's excellent. And so when can people find out more about you? You're on Triple R, Plato's Cave.
Yeah, I'm on Plato's Cave on Monday nights between 7 and 8. And there's a podcast of that as well if you missed the show.
Yep.
And I'm also... just shitposting 70s film images on Twitter non-stop.
Non-stop.
Cool.
Except for now,
This is actually one of the rare moments that I'm not posting garbage GIFs of 1970s Italian horror films on Twitter.
Love those GIFs. Love them. They're awesome. Thank you very much for speaking to us, Alexandra Hallenicholas.
Thank you,
Sonia. Excellent. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Ashley C. Williams, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Gail Simone, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
2-for-1 hoagies all day. 2-for-1 hoagies all day. 2-for-1 hoagies. 2-for-1 hoagies.
Sweetie, I told you to stay close.
The sandwich saved me. Thank you.
Hi, Pollyanna McIntosh. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
I came out here with a contract. I needed the dough. And I'm going to collect every nasty little cent of it. Maybe more.
Now, look, baby, I'm not trying to rush you.
Silly boy.
I was crazy about Ida. Ida Lupino was something. She liked to shake things up.
If this is a sample of your work, you're not very good at pickups.
Anything you ask her to do or wanted her to do, she could do it. Serious, comedic, lightweight, heavy.
Picture? What do I care about your picture? I hate you, do you understand? I hate you.
Yes, it's very irritating. She could write. She could, she knew she could direct. She had all the capacities to be a producer. She had an amazing mind.
She's best remembered as the gorgeous, tough-talking dame who personified the 40s femme fatale. But few know of her accomplishments behind the camera or that this fearless pioneer marked more milestones in American cinema and television than any woman before her and very few since. Yet curiously, Ida Lupino has been overlooked, and her legend remains one of Hollywood's best-kept secrets.
I'm Lucky McKee, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Sci-Fi and Squeam here on Joy 94.9. Can you hear the koto in the background? Yes, indeed. We're talking a little bit of J-horror very shortly. Now, we had a bit of representation there for Ida Lupino, one of the very first pioneer women, Hollywood director and actress. She made these awesome B-grade movies, they were called, but they were pretty culty and out there, including Outrage from 1950, directed by her and written by her and produced by her. She didn't star in it, strangely enough. And it was about a rape that... a terrible situation as such. Really interesting that it even made it to become a film in 1950 of all times. But the female protagonist in that fights back and seeks revenge and is quite successful. So check it out. It is online somewhere out there. And you heard some amazing people, Roddy McDowall, Gina Rowlands, great people from the past there talking about Ida Lupino's interesting career
and her influence. And we also had a bit of the soundtrack from the film The Woman from 2011, Lucky McKee, starring the wonderful Pollyanna McIntosh. She follows Sci-Fi and Squeam, and I interviewed them back in 2010. That was a long, long time ago. So that podcast is somewhere out there on joy.org.au. Check it out there somewhere. And The Woman, of course. Simon Spillane. I've got that wrong. Sean Spillane. I'll get there eventually. And that was the sound from the soundtrack of The Woman, another interesting rape revenge film, notorious for its depiction of a feral woman who is mute, played by Pollyanna, who does not have a name. She's just called The Woman. And she's abused terribly by this white suburban family who decide to keep her as a pet in their basement for some reason. And things go awry when she decides enough is enough. She's not going to be hosed down by a cold high pressure hose anymore in the backyard tied to a trough eating like a pig. No, she will not stand for that anymore. And spoiler, she does rescue some of the other women who are downtrodden in the family. And it also stars the wonderful Angela Bettis, better known for being in May, the other Lucky McKee film, which we love.
Oh, love May. I watched that in
What is that
high
about?
School.
That is amazing.
It's fun and peculiar, and I don't know, it's just sort of like a little ode to loneliness and being...
And doll-making.
And doll-making, yeah, it's amazing. And I mean, like, psychologically, obviously, she's a very disturbed woman, but so endearing, isn't she?
Well, she just wants to make a friend. She wants to make friends with men, and she just wants the ideal man. Is there something wrong with that?
No.
I don't think so.
Like, unless you're into the ideal woman, like, that's fine too, I guess.
And if you're into sewing, it's probably a good film to, you know...
It'll have you in
Pick
stitches.
You
Awful.
You might need your quick unpick.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's seamless, though, isn't it? Seamless.
Oh, stop, Sonia. Stop.
Now, in the background, we have a little bit of Japanese Koto music from the soundtrack Audition, about the film Audition. Tell us about that, Lauren.
Now, unlike the feral women we've just talked about in The Woman, our strong female protagonist in this one is very organized in her methods. Yes. She's fantastic. I watched the audition. I'd heard good things about it for a very long time and watched it for the first time last night, and I was not disappointed. So it came out in 1999. It was based on a book as well. My goodness, have you watched it recently?
I haven't watched it in quite a while. Yeah. It's something that you can pick it up and you can put it down and
run
away.
Look at that a little bit.
Oh my
God. It's phenomenal. It's a really interesting film. I'll give you like a basic plot. It starts off with two men. One man has like lost his wife, probably to something of cancer or the like, and he's living alone with his son, who suggests he remarries. And he's quite a wealthy businessman from Japan. And his best friend, who seems to be within the film industry, goes, okay, let's find you a wife by holding an audition where we say we're going to give these women a film part, but in fact it's just so that you can find the ideal woman. And naturally it's a lot of quite young women comparatively to him. Even though they're not aware of it, they are being used. And it's so funny, the contrast, the first half of the film, they even play like wacky music over the audition scene when he's like they're auditioning them. Like it's going to be like a little rom-com. And almost to the hour, the film takes a serious turn. It is very, very dark and not for the light of heart. But it is, in any case, Asami... our amazing, strong, female, rad babe, it is uncovered throughout flashbacks that she's had quite a horrible past, and this microaggression of being used in such a way is just another reason for her to seek revenge on men who have wronged her continuously throughout her life. So, I hope you sit down and watch it, but it's really good and really gory.
It's body horror, we call it body horror?
Well, it has body horror elements, but I'd almost put it up there with, like, it has torture porn elements of it at all, but it is as well, like, throughout flashbacks it's revealed that she has been subjected to sexual harassment as a child, like so it is in a way that rape revenge of the same path, and very organized, though. There is she's retrieving things out from her bag. She knows what she's doing when she does finally, when the film does peak with its torture scene. And that's sort of interesting. I mean, it's often women covered in blood who are trying to rapidly seek revenge and stabbing
or
wildly.
Whereas
this is just pure, I'm fed up. I've been fed up for a while.
Yeah.
Guess what? It's your turn, buddy.
I'm going to do something about it. Coming home.
Exactly. It's really amazing. Now, the interesting thing about Japanese horror is, and I was thinking of a few different Japanese women of Japanese horror, in films like The Grudge, which are more supernatural based, and also Ring or Ringu, there's this fantastic use of hair with women. Have you noticed? Yes. And hair being
the
such a
long black hair, like Ju-on and
Ju-on and The Grudge. Well, I don't know what the English The Grudge. And hair is obviously a huge icon of femininity.
Mm.
So having hair come out of the walls and attack you, and these are also women who have been wronged, either throughout their childhood or by men. So that sort of supernatural element and having women as true, like, supernatural monsters. The reason I bring this up and bring up those two films in particular is I think we're about to see something that we've never seen before in the horror industry, and that is Sadako versus Kayako, not Freddy versus Jason, not Alien versus Predator. Ooh. This year, Sadako versus Kayako comes out, which is The Ring versus The Grudge, which would be called in English. It's very cool. And look,
will they be made in Japan? They're made in Japan.
It is a Japanese horror. Ooh. Yeah, it has awesome. Been made in Japan. And I'm hoping it'll be a bit cheesy. I'm hoping it'll be a bit camp. I'm hoping that it'll be horrific and scary, because I'm quite scared of those women as monsters and creatures in the night and not being able to just hide under the covers, because they get you under the covers. That's truly scary.
Ghosts are very big in Asian culture as far as stories go.
And
so
wronged
supernatural
spirits. Yeah.
And spirits coming back. Mm-hmm. And this whole, like, Dark Water, you know,
so
2002 by director Hideo Nakata. So scary, and about separation between a couple and the fight over custody for their little daughter.
Yeah.
And, there's so much going on in that film.
So much.
So I find
that the really wonderful thing about Japanese horror as well is they like to show motivation through flashbacks. You see the outcome of what atrocities have been committed to these women, but you only see that outcome. You only see the reasoning behind their actions as flashbacks. Like with Audition, it was the same. Like throughout the torture scene, we get the flashbacks. We see that she's been wronged most of her life. You are then rooting for her, absolutely rooting for her to seek revenge. The same happens with it's Sadako's from the... Oh, my goodness, I've confused the films. I think Sadako's from The Ring. She's wronged throughout her childhood as well, and is subjected to abuse from family. But in particular, Kayako, we discover that she's in an abusive relationship. It's almost not framed that way, or it's not framed that way where it's outright said, but she falls in love with somebody else, and abusive relationships being about power, her husband finds out, and he finds out by reading her journal where she's written, I'm in love with this teacher and I'm like that. And she, to me, is almost the ultimate strong woman, because she has started her journey out of this relationship, because obviously, even though we've not seen previous abuse, he murders her in a fit of rage. And to take those first steps of getting out of an abusive, emotionally abusive relationship.
So that's interesting, because they've taken that fit of rage, and that's how a lot of, sadly, and the terrible thing is, a lot of domestic violence that does happen.
Yes.
And when a woman is murdered in the real world, it often happens because of these rages from men.
Yes.
And it can happen and it can lead to... a disaster like that.
Absolute tragedy. Mm. So she is the ultimate strong woman in Japanese horror to me, because she has taken the first steps of dreaming about getting out of this relationship that is obviously destructive. Although it's not mentioned, she is murdered ultimately. So where do you think that comes from? Was he like this before? We're not told, but obviously. You know, so yeah, it's
come from nothing. That's true.
Exactly. Yep. So I thought that was really interesting. To head back to Audition though, I do highly recommend everybody gives it a watch. It might be feminist film watch of the week.
and it's had a huge influence. I mean, Eli Roth, I would say, American Mary by the Soska twins, who we love.
Oh, yeah,
very big influence there, and many others probably we don't know. But if you do know, let us know. 0427JOY949 or onair@joy.org.au, because this is all about strong female characters and protagonists and genre, and, of course, something different for International Women's Day here on Joy 94.9.
This is Lolita Faggio, script coordinator for Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager, and I'm here today with Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Thank you.
This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy and 94.9 International Women's Day Night here in the Joy Studios. And that was the fabulous Nina Simone. I wish I knew what it was like to be free. You can't go wrong with that. If you want a feminist song from the good times that were awful, that's the song for you. Lauren Stardust, what did you think of that song?
It was beautiful. It was fantastic. The wonderful Nina Simone.
Yeah, there's too many of her back catalogue to really get into.
Too many? Not enough.
Not enough. I know. I love her so much. I was going to play some Sleater-Kinney, but we're running out of time. And, of course, speaking of Sleater-Kinney, the one and only Carrie Brownstein. Hello, Carrie. She is in Melbourne. Right now, we're breathing the same oxygen. Not in the studio, but she's flying in, flying out, that woman. Whoa. Just amazing. Portlandia. I mean, she appeared in Carol, the film Carol.
Yes.
Recently. She's just everywhere. She's just an awesome feminist babe. And so are you, Lauren.
Oh,
and
stop it.
So you were talking about Audition, this Japanese film from the J horror.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Yes.
No, that's creepy, creepy, creepy.
Very, very creepy. Yeah. If you've seen the Audition, you'd understand. And you'd probably cringing a little or wetting your pants at home if you were to hear that noise.
Be careful if you do wet your pants,
yes.
though. You know, gotta
Asami,
be.
Asami, one of the most amazing female protagonists I've seen in a long
very
time.
Very strong.
Yes, very fantastic. And truly a wonderful monster. Oh, I think she's just great.
Celebrate the monsters, the woman monsters, the female monsters.
Yeah, well, you know, so regularly women are pigeonholed into, you know, basically Betty Crocker homemaking, perfect idol, or even
rom-com, Jennifer Aniston, Catherine Heigl.
Yeah.
Oh, we're just looking for a good guy.
You know, we can wake up to just flip that on its head once in a while. And I mean,
when you wake up to the good guy that's not the good guy, or the good gal that's not the good gal, and she's a bad gal.
Oh, totally bad gal.
What do you do with them?
Well, you just let them run free. You film them. You make stories about them.
You
for
get
my
your
enjoyment.
Sewing kit out.
You do. You do indeed. Yeah, it's one fun thing about Asami as well is I was just mentioning before was she doesn't compromise her femininity, even though she is. Even though she's committing atrocities and torturing these men who have wronged her throughout her life, she is very confident in herself, which I think is phenomenal. And it's almost as though she's gained confidence from truly claiming physical power over men who have claimed physical power over her in her past.
I think that's what genre films do. They really do bring out the that ability to feel, well, this is an alternative. This is not real. This would never happen in the real world, or would it?
Or would it?
But if it did, you know, what would you do in these situations? And sometimes they can be interesting lessons, I suppose.
Yeah, and also outlets for people who have either been through emotional, physical abuse.
And you can watch these and feel a cathartic
release. There can be very triggering moments in those films for a lot of people, and I understand, you know, it is just a different form of art, and you can take from it as whatever you need to due to your or because of your own life experiences. But as an outlet, these revenge films, these rape revenge films, sexual harassment for revenge films have been really beneficial to a lot of women who weren't able to act out on things that have happened to them in their life, you know.
Oh, we've had a message. This is from Dean in Northcote. He thought Audition was excellent, but he most certainly was not rooting for her. And during the kitty, kitty, kitty scene, most people would have lost all sympathy for her. Dean from Northcote.
Ah, well, the film wasn't made for you.
thank you.
Thank you very much. But I know, I obviously took something a lot different from it. Should I read this one out?
Yeah, read that one out.
Okay, do you think Audition inspired Hard Candy? The way she's so organised in her revenge and the theme of men being bloody awful struck me as similar. Ah, we don't know who that one's from, but that's a very good question. What would you say, Sonia?
Yeah, look, Hard Candy did have a bit of flack for some of its content. I mean, I did enjoy it, though, for, well, the great performances in it. I think there's parts of it in there. I would say that since 1999, if you've made any kind of noir or thriller or horror film that involves a type of revenge, I would say that you've been influenced one way or the other by Audition.
Oh, absolutely.
And if you dig enough, I'm sure we could find out the filmmaker for Hard Candy may indeed have also. It's a good point.
Hard Candy
does remind me more of Grimm's fairy tales, though, you know, when we're looking at...
She's like a little horrible Red Riding Hood. Yeah.
She is a bit. You know, what's she going to do with that wolf? Well...
It's interesting. I suppose... In a way, Teeth would then sort of be, it's about a young woman finding power. I mean, we follow her through her journey of finding power, whereas Audition sort of looks at flashbacks. So I'd say Hard Candy would be a lot more similar to Audition than something like Teeth would be, even though that's seeking revenge. It's also through a shorter time frame. To be honest, I haven't watched Hard Candy in a long time, and that's set over... That's sort of, you're given an impression that she's been doing this for a long time. She is organized.
Yes.
She is in control. It'd be interesting to see a Teeth sequel. That was a little more like...
Or Hard Candy, maybe. It is Ellen Page. Am I wrong?
Yes, it is Ellen Page.
Of course, fabulous. Yeah, I don't know if there has been any talk of doing something different.
Maybe. 2005, my goodness.
Wow, that's ages ago.
I was working in a video store.
But what a wonderful poster.
Oh,
it really
such
is.
A good poster.
Standing in a trap.
Yes.
And probably has affected Patrick Wilson's career somewhat, I would say. But, oh well, he's a good actor, that's for sure. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam. We're about to wrap it up very shortly and have the School of Pop in a moment. We'll be back to say goodbye for our International Women's Day special here on Joy. Yeah, Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Revenge is sweet. Here on International Women's Day, we're saying some strong female characters. It is good to stand up for yourself and who you are and be confident.
And most importantly, I think this International Women's Day and throughout the rest of the year, stand up for other women.
Sometimes yes. Oh, hello, goblin.
And now that was our power ballad out.
That was the power ballad.
Standing up for other women is really important. Mm. And it's one of those things I've learnt throughout my experiences. If I've been sexually harassed or had anything like that happen, street harassment and so on, being able to stand up for other women, because often it takes a long time to get into the habit of standing up for yourself. Once you've got that down pat, you can start standing up for other women, and then in turn, they start to stand up for themselves. We're indoctrinated into a society that really devalues women and teaches women that this is normal. And as far as I'm concerned, as far as everybody knows, it isn't. It isn't normal, so start noticing and start making a change.
Yay. And you heard that here on Sci-Fi and Squeam. Look, thanks, Lauren, so much for coming in.
Anytime. I'm always a pleasure. Yeah. Always a pleasure.
You say that now. But yes, look, we will podcast this later in the week. I still have to podcast last week's show, so I'm getting there, people. Give
me
time.
It's a 2-for-1 deal, everybody.
Night Terrace and all the gang, which was fun last week. So yes, plenty of interesting films there to look at. I'll put a list of those on our Sci-Fi and Squeam Facebook page. In the meantime, the School of Pop is coming to take you through to the witching hour. We love our witches. And don't forget, The Witch actually starts next week, March the 17th. And we also have Cloverfield 10 starting this Thursday, March the 10th.
We'll 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Oh, sorry. I like to shorten things already. Isn't that terrible? All right, thanks for listening. And stay tuned here on Joy 94.9.
You've been listening to a podcast of Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Check out joy.org.au/sci-fi and squeam for more.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.